So let's get, before we get started on this session, I want to make a couple of announcements. I've been urged to further urge all the speakers to send the slides of their talks to the KITP staff. If you haven't done so far, please do so before you leave. People tend to forget these things once you're far away from Santa Barbara. So since this last session, I want to thank you all for having come and made this a wonderful conference. One person deserves very special thanks for all the wonderful work, the magical work that she has done in enabling this conference to go on smoothly. So Claudia is here. I think we should give her a huge round of applause. As a small token of our appreciation, we'd like to give her some flowers. All right.
Okay, so the next speaker is John Carding, who's going to talk about the entanglement gap in CFTs and also clarify the relation between the metaphysical and the metaphorical
and the unmetaphorical. So this conference has been about the supposedly entanglement gap in a metaphorical sense, and I suppose that the organizers were implying that there is somehow a gap existing in understanding of entanglement between quantum gravity, holography, field theory, condensed matter, quantum information. And I think we've, in fact, seen from this conference that there is indeed no gap at all, so I don't have to talk about that. Instead, I will talk about a very down-to-earth subject, that is, what is the unmetaphorical entanglement gap in conformal field theories. And the first thing that I have to say is that when my wife was checking through my slides for errors in the spelling, she immediately saw the word unmetaphorical, and she used to actually teach English, and she said, there is no such word. Literal is the right word. Okay, so crossed it out. Okay, so I'm going to be talking mainly about boring old Renyi entropies in some rather simple geometries. These are going to be a sort of a reworking of mostly old results, perhaps from a slightly fresh perspective. But I am going to be presenting some results as well, which are hopefully new. So you've all seen this before. We are talking about bipartite entanglement. We're talking about the whole system being in a pure state, usually the ground state of some local Hamiltonian, which is usually going to be a conformal field theory, though not always. We define the reduced density matrix, and that defines the entanglement Hamiltonian Ka with the factor of 2 pi inserted for convenience. That entanglement Hamiltonian usually has, as we will see, a discrete spectrum, and we would like to understand what that spectrum is. And in terms of this, we define the Renyi entropies as the log of the trace of rho A to the n, with this rather annoying conventional factor of 1 over 1 minus n, which occasionally I will remember. And so I'm working in units often where that factor is equal to 1. So the kind of questions that we would like to answer is, how does the largest eigenvalue of the reduced density matrix behave? What can we say about the entanglement gaps? What can we say about the form of the density of states of the entanglement Hamiltonian? An interesting question that I won't comment on here, but for which I have a number of interesting results, is what can we say about the correlation functions in the eigenstates of Ka? In principle, of course, the Renyi entropies, if you know them for every n, n doesn't have to be an integer, of course, this determines the entanglement spectrum, but we will actually see that the interesting behavior is either given by what happens at large n or small n, and by small n I mean really small n, much less than 1, and so I'm not going to be talking quite so much about the actual entanglement entropy, which is of course what is happening around n equals 1. As usual, we can say much more in 1 plus 1 dimensions, but I will talk a little at the end about d larger than 2. And in fact, what I want to point out is that a number of the results that I'll present in 1 plus 1 dimensions, that several different physical cases can be unified into one formula. So let's go back to the original case that was studied a long time ago now, of a single interval from minus r to plus r on the real line, on the infinite real line, in a 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory. So this is a space imaginary time diagram, and you can see how you can nicely foliate that space with the blue circles, and these red lines then show how the entanglement Hamiltonian, which is defined on the line here, propagates around, so that when you take e to the minus 2 pi ka, you actually get all the way around, and if you go n times, then you get the trace of rho a to the n. So basically, the Renyi entropies are given by a partition function on an n-fold covering of this plane, divided by a normalization factor, which is just the nth power of the single covering, just to ensure that the trace of rho A is equal to 1. And for those of you who've been at the workshop earlier and are used to seeing this in Minkowski signature, where you have pictures of Rindler wedges, etc., the reason that I'm not drawing that is that my computer graphics program draws circles much easier than it draws hyperbole. So this problem, of course, was considered a long time ago, and in the particular approach that was actually taken then, the partition function on that plane, that is CR1, was of course taken to be trivial, and the way that the partition function on Rn was actually worked out was to evaluate the trace of this stress tensor, which then gives you a way of computing the response of the log of the partition function to a change in R. But another way of actually doing this is to actually, and in the end you actually find that although the response here is actually finite, because this goes like 1 over R, when you integrate this up, you have to actually regulate the answer, and the answer goes like log of R over some ultraviolet regulators. So the answer has to be regulated, and you might as well regulate it in another way by removing a small disk at the end of this interval. So when you do that, you get something like this here. Okay, and of course this can then be conformally mapped then to something like the Hess, where the interval now goes from 0 to infinity, and the entanglement Hamiltonian then moves you around these circles here. So it's a generator of rotations in the Euclidean plane, which in Minkowski's signature, of course, become boosts. So this conformal transformation here is in fact a Möbius transformation, because it sends circles into circles, and this can still be done in higher dimensions as well. If you imagine this coming out of the board, this would be the two-dimensional version, the 2+1 dimensional version, and then you would be looking at the entanglement of the region inside a circle, for example. But in 1+1 dimensions, we have more conformal mappings at our which are available, and of course this has the topology of an annulus, and therefore can actually be mapped into the more conventional presentation of an annulus, where I look at a rectangle of width 2 log epsilon 2 log r and height 2 pi n, where I identify the top boundary with the bottom boundary, and the inner circle gets identified with the left edge, the outer circle with this one here. So here, this circle gets identified with the left edge, this circle gets identified with the right edge. And that means that because of conformal invariance of the partition function, the trace of rho A to the n can, in fact, in a conformal field theory, be related to the ratio of the partition function of an annulus with an aspect ratio 2 pi n over log r, with one with aspect ratio 2 pi over r. And the point is, in a conformal field theory, in general, in 1+1 dimensions, we know a great deal about this. These partition functions on an annulus. They're most easily expressed in terms of the quantity Q, which is the modulus, which in these units is e to the minus pi the height over the width, which is e to the minus 1 over log r, which is, of course, almost equal to 1. We know that this has an expansion in powers of q of the form here, where what occurs here are the boundary scaling dimensions of the CFT with their degeneracies here. We also know it can be expressed in terms of the conjugate modulus, which is q tilde is basically e to the minus 1 over log q. And as this approaches 1, this approaches 0. So, and it can equally well be expanded in this particular way. And those basically correspond to the either considering the Hamiltonian as going up the annulus that way or across the annulus that way. Okay, and you see, because q tilde is small, this expansion is generally much more useful than the one here, except when n is large, because as we consider the n-fold covering of the annulus, q goes into q to the n, therefore q tilde goes into q tilde to the 1 over n, and for n sufficiently large, this is not, in fact, small. And in fact, it turns out that if you're interested in the generic gross behavior, this is the expansion which is actually useful. But if you're interested in the actual entanglement spectrum, this is the one. So if we just take the first term in this expansion here, the leading term, we just get the classic result here. We divide out these two and we find that the Reni entropies go like n minus 1 over n log r, with now this interesting extra term, because we actually cut this disk out. This disk is a macroscopic disk, which is much smaller than r, but much larger than the ultraviolet cutoff. So now we actually have to decide what boundary condition we actually put on the edge of the disk, and we get an additional contribution now from the Affleck-Ludwig boundary entropy here. Okay, so that's the standard result. It's quite interesting if you look at higher order terms in the expansion, because they now go like epsilon over r to the delta over n. And these were understood before because they're rather unusual corrections to scaling, because usually when you look at finite size corrections at a critical point, they involve just the standard irrelevant operators, and they certainly don't depend upon n. So these are rather strange corrections to scaling. As I said, if we look at the expansion in powers of q, we identify all the entanglement spectrum, and it's basically the spectrum of states of the conformal field theory in a finite interval. So we, for a given conformal field theory, we in principle know these, and we know all the degeneracies. One interesting thing to note in all of this is that the large, in this particular way of regularizing things, the term proportional to n in the Reni entropies comes entirely from the denominator, not the numerator. Whilst the previous way of doing it, the denominator was trivial, and everything came from the numerator. So that means that in fact, if you want to consider the behavior of the largest eigenvalue of the reduced density matrix, all you need to do is to consider the partition function on this space with a couple of holes cut out of it. Okay, so I told you that we can relate the Reni entropies to basically this partition function on the annulus, which you can express in terms of the trace of e to the minus the Hamiltonian, which is the integral of the time-time component of the stress tensor. If you undo the conformal mappings to get back to the single interval, then you reduce this rather, then you reproduce this rather beautiful result for the entanglement Hamiltonian, which is sometimes called the modular Hamiltonian due to Cassini et al. The other thing to notice from this, we can easily work out the asymptotic behavior of the density of states of the entanglement Hamiltonian. They're precisely given by the standard asymptotic behavior of the density of states of a 1 plus 1 to 1 one-dimensional CFT on this line. And we can work this out. The point is this comes entirely from the behavior as n goes to zero in this expression here. So if we know the behavior of the Reni entropies as n goes to zero, then we can work out the asymptotic behavior of the density of states. Okay, I'm now going to give very quickly a couple of other examples where exactly the same formula holds in with slightly different interpretations of Q. One is that we can look at the single interval at the end of an infinite one. Then once again, once you cut out this disk, you get an annulus with a slightly different formula for Q. I won't go through that. A more interesting case is if we consider entanglement growth in a conformal field theory after a quantum quench. If you start from a particular short range entangled initial state, which is the one that Calabresi and I considered, then you can work out the entanglement of this region A versus the rest in terms of a Euclidean path integral from 0 to beta over 2 with this boundary state here and here, with a branch cut along here. So once again, once I take out this small circle here, this whole thing is an annulus once again, although it might not look like it. One boundary is here, the other boundary is the union of the top and the bottom edges, so that the partition function here is this. The only thing that you have to do, this is in imaginary time, tau, and you have to continue this to real time, but it turns out you can. Then you find that the Q and the Q tilde of the annulus behave in this way, depending on T. And you conclude, therefore, that the entanglement entropy grows proportional to log cosh t, which behaves like t squared at short times, linearly at large times, which is this interesting prediction. But also you can calculate how the entanglement gaps shrink with t, and they go like, for example, 1 over t. You can also work out the modular Hamiltonian, which has the following form. So, So this is basically an integral along A of the Hamiltonian density times this function f of x of t, which for time zero is growing. That means that you can think of f as being an effective local inverse temperature. So this inverse temperature initially is actually growing with x, which means that the entanglement is short range. And then once you let the system evolve, this is basically a constant, so it's basically beta over 2 pi, which basically tells you that the interval 0 to t becomes thermalized whilst outside this growing light cone, the entanglement remains short-ranged. And there's all sorts of interesting behavior actually happens on the light cone itself. So the actual details of the conformal field theory here are actually concentrated on the light cone. Now the fourth example of the same formula is actually from a completely different branch of mathematical physics, which is to discuss non-critical integrable lattice models, because then once again I'm looking at the entanglement of the entire right half line. This is supposed to be imaginary time again, and Baxter, a long time ago, had the idea of a corner transfer matrix, which actually takes you from here to here. If you do that 4 times, then you obviously get to the reduced density matrix of the right half line. And what Baxter showed was that for models which satisfy, for models whose Boltzmann weights satisfy the Young-Baxter relations, the spectrum of this corner transfer matrix, and therefore the spectrum of rho A, is in fact calculable. It's actually quite simple. But the other remarkable thing is that when you then work out the entanglement entropies, you get exactly, almost exactly, modulo boundary conditions, the same formula as we got for a conformal field theory in a finite system at the critical point, where, however, now Q tilde is basically the inverse of the correlation length squared, and Q is this. And now, instead of this being a macroscopic cutoff, this is a microscopic cutoff. So there are kind of deep mathematical reasons for this, but there's no physical explanation. This relation of the spectrum of the corner transfer matrix to the characters of a conformal field theory has been known since the 1980s, but we have no physical explanation for it yet. And I would say this observation is crying out for an entanglement explanation. Okay, so how much time do I have now? Oh, good. Okay, so I'm now going to talk about higher dimensions. So as I mentioned earlier, Cassini et al. Told us what the entanglement Hamiltonian is for the case of a sphere where you're in d space-time dimensions, d minus 1. Space dimensions, you are looking at a sphere S d minus 2. You're looking at the entanglement between the region inside the sphere and outside, and it basically has the same form that I wrote down earlier. So, as I said earlier, you can think about this factor here as basically an effective local inverse temperature, and if we do it n times, that is, if we work out the trace of e to the minus n Ka, then the effective local inverse temperature is this. Now, that by itself doesn't really help you unless this effective inverse temperature is very, very small compared with the actual extent of the system. And then you can basically assert that the system is going to be in local thermal equilibrium with an effective space dependent temperature. And obviously this is going to happen, this is always going to happen, as long as n is much, much less than 1. And in that case, you can basically use, so you can write the Rényi entropies for small n in terms of an integral of this factor times the expectation value of the Hamiltonian density at this particular effective temperature, and that's just basically given by a generalization of Stefan's law that basically says that this goes like the inverse temperature to the d minus 1. Therefore, for small n, you can basically say that we want to that we have the Stefan-Boltzmann constant of the CFT divided by this effective temperature to the power d minus 1 integrated. Now, you see this actually goes to 0 near the boundary, and so the leading term for this integral comes from very close to the boundary. That of course gives you the well-known area law, but now we have a coefficient for the area law, which is basically the Stefan-Boltzmann constant divided by n to the d minus 1. And if you work out the corrections to this formula, then you get the famous logarithmic term for d even, and the order 1 term for d odd. Now, this Stefan-Boltzmann constant for 1 plus 1 dimensional theories is just basically the central is basically the central charge, but for higher dimensional conformal field theories, it's just basically the number that gives you the asymptotic growth of the density of states of the CFT. So whether it's related to A or C or anything, I don't see why it has to be in general. However, if you that really works only for small n, much, 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 much smaller than 1, so it's not particularly useful. But you see, actually, close to the boundary, this thing gets small even when n is quite large, right? So we can actually still use this approximation here, not for all r, but in fact, still close to the boundary. And when you do that, then you can actually see that this 1 over n to the d minus 1 dependence for the area law is actually true for for, in fact, and all the way up to some extremely large values of n. So we therefore conclude that the area law by itself has a very trivial dependence upon n. Now, this doesn't mean that the coefficient of the logarithm, which is the universal term, has the same n dependence. And in fact, I'm very worried about attributing any significance to this factor at all, because it depends upon a particular regularization scheme. Sort of, this is like comparing the divergent terms for the mass of the proton to the mass of the pion. You know, it doesn't mean anything really. So, but within this particular regularization scheme, this is what you have. But it also tells you that when this starts to actually fail, that's when you start seeing the discreteness of the entanglement spectrum. So in this regularization scheme, once again, you conclude that the entanglement gaps have to actually behave in this particular way. That is, as R goes to infinity, they close in this particular way. And you can see as D goes to 2, this goes over into the behavior that we found earlier. So I'm just on my last slide. What I've shown is that for several simple cases, I've listed a few of them there, with a suitable regularization, we know the Reinier entropies and the entanglement spectrum exactly, and they are basically given by well-known universal properties of the CFT. And we've shown that within this same regularization scheme, the n goes, well, in general, I think this is kind of a universal statement, independent of the regularization scheme, because it also applies to the universal terms, that the n goes to zero behavior is always just given by the Stefan-Boltzmann constant of the CFT. And within this regularization scheme, you can actually extend this to all n for the area law coefficient. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
So at the beginning, you cut out little disks, and then you had to choose, although you didn't mention it, I think you had to choose boundary conditions there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure.
So
these affect the order one terms in
so
yes.
So B naught?
Yeah, yes. So presumably, if you just did this on a lattice and you didn't choose boundary conditions, there will be some kind of natural boundary condition which would actually correspond to this. I mean, what we're doing here is basically what we do all the time when we try to apply a quantum field theory to a lattice model. We find an ultraviolet divergence in our field theory. We then assume that the results that we get hold if we take that ultraviolet cutoff equal to the lattice spacing, and that should be true at least for universal quantities, but not necessarily for non-universal quantities.
So a given CFT will have a certain number of allowed boundary conditions.
A minimum of a will, yeah, yeah. I mean, a finite number.
Well, even if it's not finite, there'll be some set of boundary conditions.
Probably, yes, yes.
And so, therefore, some set of B-naughts.
Yeah.
And if we just did a lattice or something where we weren't careful to have boundary conditions that respected the conformal symmetry, would your formula still be correct, but with one of those values of B-naught?
Yeah. One particular one which somehow corresponds to the most natural one. So I don't know quite what that means, but for example, if you're talking about an Ising model, that will correspond to the boundary conditions being free, for example. But okay.
So, did I understand your statement correctly that the entanglement gap, that the entanglement gap in higher dimensions scales as 1 over r to some power?
Yeah, that's my claim, yeah.
Is that special for a disk geometry or sphere?
Oh, I can only prove it for I can only argue it for a disk geometry, because we don't know how to write down the entanglement Hamiltonian in general. But because this divergence comes from the boundary, it probably is true in general. So the claim is that the gap will close like a certain power of the area, basically, yeah.
This is a bit surprising, because I think if you take a cylinder with a finite circumference and think about entanglement gap there, at least for a free theory, I think naturally goes as 1 over log even in higher dimensions.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, but that's a slightly different kind of geometry there. When you do it for a cylinder, you basically have, at least the only solvable case I know is if you do it for a free theory, and then you basically get the sum of the 1 plus 1 dimensional cases, and I agree that wouldn't probably work then, so yeah. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
I had two questions, both about the quenches. So first is, I think there's some recent work by Hughes and collaborators that talk about the approach to saturation when you do a quench, and how conservation laws would affect that saturation.
Yeah.
Do you see that in the 1 plus 1D result, because you do indeed have...
The approach to the quench would... the approach to saturation is precisely this region where all the details of the conformal field theory are important. So if you had conservation laws, for example, they would enter there. Now, exactly how, I'm not sure. Okay.
And the related question is, what is the status of seeing a generalized Gibbs ensemble emerge in these?
The question... the particular state that we chose, this sort of e to the minus beta h acting on the boundary state, always gives you a simple Gibbs ensemble. In that sense, when we first chose this state, we were either lucky or unlucky, I'm not sure which. But I believe that if you start from a more general state in a 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT, you will then go to a generalized Gibbs ensemble, and then I don't know how to do the calculation.
Okay. Thank you very much, John.
Right.